Blog Talk Radio.
Barnett and Rick Hunt radio show with the amazing Kate Taylor as our guest. Rick, how are you today? Welcome, Kate.
I am fine, and I am so excited to be with both of you ladies today.
Hello, Angie. Hi, Rick. How are you guys doing?
Hi, Kate. Welcome.
Hello, Kate. I'm going to throw in my quick...
Okay.
I'm so excited to have Miss Kate Taylor here. She's enjoyed a long and fascinating career in the music industry. Her artistic talents include design and singing, performing, and touring. As a member of one of the most well-known musical families in the U.S., Kate's brothers were Livingston, Alex, Hugh, and James. Her first album, Sister Kate, came out in 1971, followed by another on Columbia, produced by Brother James. Kate Taylor in 1978 was followed by It's In There in 1979. And after raising her daughters, Kate came back in 2003 with Beautiful Road, Kate Taylor, Live at the Cutting Room in 2005, and Fair Time in 2009. Her career includes dozens of studio albums and many singles spanning her career, including Caroline on My Mind, Knocking Around the Zoo, Sweet Baby James, Fire and Rain, Country Road, You've Got a Friend, Don't Let Me Be Lonely Tonight, Long Ago and Far Away, Devoted to You, Up on the Roof. We are looking forward to catching up with Kate and hearing her wonderful songs and celebrating the traditions and passions of her life. Please join us, Miss Kate Taylor. Hooray!
Yay!
Well, you honor me too much. This is great. I'm delighted to be with you on your show and talking to you and your wonderful listeners out there. I'm humbled by your comments. What more is there to say? There's many stories.
Yep.
So where to begin? That's the question.
They always say, let's begin at the beginning. Please tell us. I read this and my jaw dropped. The first thing I saw when I was looking at your website was that you had your first band when you were 15 years old. Would you start from there, Missy? It's so wonderful.
Well, yeah, you know, I had a well, it was, I think it was in junior high, and
right.
there was a we were down in Chapel Hill, and there was a talent show, and some friends of mine and I, we actually, there were two groups we got together. One was me with another, with a couple of girlfriends. We called ourselves Peter, Paul, and Mounds. And we did, you know, folk tunes. It was the you know, the folk scare era at that time.
Yes.
And then a configuration of, you know, rock and rollers, and a combo, and we did, you know, rock and roll pop tunes. And I remember in this show, this one talent show we performed in, I sang "Do You Want to Dance?" And while I was with the band, and while I was singing, a friend of mine skateboarded across the stage back and forth, you know, rolling around on his skateboard. I think it must have been
cool.
like one of the first skateboards ever. But my brother James was also on that show. And he must have been, you know, in just starting in high school. And our brother Alex was a part of the lighting crew. And
right.
then Alex and James ended up putting a combo together that they had called the Fabulous Corsairs. And their motto was "The sounds that abound with musical style." And they
oh,
did
fabulous.
Cover tunes and, you know, played at frat parties and sock hops and proms and that kind of thing around the state of North Carolina. And then they started to write their own songs, and they did some recording. This is when they were probably like 16 and 17 years old. They did some recording of these songs in Raleigh, and their songs got on the radio and were played by WKIX
cool.
out of Raleigh. So it was like... anything was possible, you know. There were no there. You know, if you could watch people, you know, writing songs, playing live, and then having these songs get put on the radio, it just, you know, it just kind of made you feel like there wasn't anything that wasn't, you know, that was out of bounds. So
that's right.
I don't remember a time when I didn't sing. I mean, my friends keep telling me, Kate, when you were a kid, that we couldn't shut you up. you know, I mean, I sang and sang all the time, and I think it was just a natural progression for me that I, you know, get together with other musician friends and play and sing. And my brothers and I had done some singing just at home, you know, around the table and Nothing professional or anything, but when we were kids, we really liked the Dixie Hummingbirds and the Staple Singers and, you know, the harmonies that they made, and we would, Sam Cooke, and we would sing these songs together. And then when James was recording for the Beatles label in London, that was back in 68 or 69, well, maybe it was 69, I went over there to visit him. And I met Peter Asher, who was James's producer at the time and manager. And James and I went out to Peter's summer cottage in the countryside. And there was this ancient stone swimming pool out in the backyard that was empty.
Hmm.
And James and I went down into that swimming pool and started to sing some of the tunes that we, you know, used to sing together. Like we did that Charlie and Inez Fox tune of "Mockingbird Now, Everybody Have a Heard," which he ended up later recording with Carly. Well, he and I used to sing that a lot, and we sang it in this, you know, empty pool. And, you know, it's like singing in the shower. Everything sounds really good, you know.
I bet it sounded amazing.
Well, Peter Asher heard us singing. And then, you know, I flew home. I came back. By then I was living on Martha's Vineyard. I flew back home, and with a month or so went by. And then Peter, out of the blue, called me up and said, "I'm moving to Los Angeles. Do you want to make a record?" And I said, "Let me think about it. Yes." And I flew out to L.A., and James was out there, you know, I think he was recording. This was when he and Carol King, and I think James had started to make his record. Which one did he do out there? Sweet Baby James or something was the next one after that Beatles record. I can't remember. But anyway, he was recording. He had met Carol King and, you know, had some of his players that he'd worked with for years before he went to London out there, you know, making this record. And he helped Peter kind of make a demo for me. And Peter took the demo to Ahmet Ertegun, who said, yes, we'd like to sign Kate. And so I got signed to a label, and then we started to make my record, Sister Kate, which ended up being finished and released in 1971. So in the meantime, I was out there in 69, 70, and 71, you know, for long stretches of time, making the record and putting a band together for the tour and basically having the time of my life.
Could I interrupt for 1 second because I'm so excited? Would it be appropriate? Would you be happy if we were to play Red Tail right now? And would you be so kind as to introduce it for us? Because I'm crazy about this song, and just hearing
well,
you talking
song,
about
Red
singing
Tales, that I wrote. You know, but I had done a lot of covers and was writing, singing other people's tunes for a long time, and then I, you know, thought, you know, it's time I start trying to write my own songs. This Red Tail was recorded on a record that I did, well, in the fairly recent past, and it was a record that was all songs that I either wrote or co-wrote. And this song, Red Tail, was written with my friend and my guitar player at the time, Billy Derby. And it's about, well, my husband, Charlie, had been ill, and he, we didn't know that his demise was imminent. This was back in 2001, I think. Yeah, 2001. We didn't know that we knew he was not well, but we had always hoped that he would get better. Well, there was a red-tailed hawk that was in the tree, one of the trees outside the house, and that's not such a rare sighting around here, but this was rare in that the bird was going caw, 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 you know, all day, calling and calling, and this went on for many, you know, well, several days in a row, 4 or 5 days this bird was out there. It was in September, and I'd go out for an errand, I'd come back in, the bird would be going caw, caw, caw. Well, he says, hey, that bird really likes you. And then a day or two later, Charlie had a medical event. He had to be med flighted up to Boston. And we realized when we all gathered there in the ICU that we were going to have to let him go.
No.
And so we said goodbye. We actually, my daughters and I were standing around Charlie's bedside, and we started to sing some Staple Singer's songs, which were his favorites. And I looked over, and there was one tear that was coming out. And then we let him go, and we brought him home, and we had a service for him up in Gayhead at the cemetery, and there was a large crowd of people that were gathered around who'd known Charlie. And it was also 2001. Charlie died on September 12, 2001. So it was like he was in the hospital when that, you know, the planes hit the, you know, towers, and it was like this extraordinary, strange period of time. He'd been med flighted up on September 10th. And then 9/11 happened the next day, and then we had to, you know, let him go on the 12th and brought him home, and the service was on the 15th, and everybody in the community it was so important, well, not only, you know, to gather and celebrate, you know, Charlie and say goodbye, but also just to be together after this intense thing that happened for the whole country.
Yeah.
So, at the service, there was a red-tailed hawk that was flying above, circling above. And then couple of weeks later, it was our daughter's birthday, and there was a red-tailed hawk. And then a few days after that was our anniversary, and there was a red-tailed hawk that made its presence known. And then a little bit after that was Charlie's birthday, and I went out for a walk, was walking down the road, and there was this red-tailed hawk that was following me down the road. So I said, okay, I get it. You know, it just made me think that Charlie was visiting, you know, that the red-tailed hawk was sort of a, you know, represented him. So I came back in and I wrote these lyrics down, and then a while later I was working, like I said, with my friend Billy Derby, and he put them to this music. So that's the story of that song.
Wow.
Thank you so much. I can't wait.
The moonlight turned to liquid, and it poured down from the sky. A river of quicksilver, the path of love light from your eyes. The pond held that shimmer, a pair of herons stood in its bill. Like reeds with knees, they listen. I dare you to be that still. I've been waiting for your visit in my dream, and it came to be. Heaven's door would open, and you'd come and visit. Day sky was striped with clouds, like so many years before. I sang your song, said baby, and stepped outside the door. Today the world spins one more time. How can it go so fast? How can we make each second count and make each moment last? I've been waiting for your visit in my dream, and it came to be. Heaven's door would open, and you'd come and visit me. Heart, it's got a crack. It's sweet to think his work is done, but I want my baby. I want my baby. I want my baby back. I've been waiting for your dream on the wing of the red-tailed hawk. This morning one flew over when I went out for that walk. I guess I must have seen in my dream, and it came to be. Heaven's door would open, and you'd come and visit.
just beautiful.
Oh, man, it's nice to hear again.
Miss Kate.
I sing it on my shows, but I haven't heard the recorded version in a while. Dang, sounds pretty good.
Yeah, it sure does. It's just lovely. I heard it. I was listening to all kinds of your songs, and that one just, it resonated with me. I guess because I'm always so intuitive about who's written what. It felt real to me.
Yeah. Well, it's always really a moving song, you know, for me to sing.
I bet.
You know, Charlie had co-produced this record that I made after, you know, we raised the kids, and hadn't done any, you know, any recording or not, you know, no records of my own for quite some time, and Charlie had, you know, always planned that eventually, you know, we'd get back to it when the kids were, you know, launched and we could do that, and it got to the point where, but I'd had a group of musicians that I'd been working with, and on and off, and occasionally whenever we could, we'd work together do a show. And one of the players was a guy named Tony Garnier, who plays bass and is the music director for Bob Dylan. And he's an amazing and wonderful player and a great guy. And, of course, Bob Dylan works all the time, so it was rare when we got opportunities to play with Tony. But at one point, it was terrible news, but Bob Dylan had to cancel a lot of shows. This was back in, like, 95 or something, because he had this infection in his heart or something.
Mm. Oh, my goodness.
Heard about this.
Yeah.
You heard on the radio that Dylan had to cancel shows, and we thought, whoa, Tony's going to be, you know. It's terrible news about Dylan, but Tony Garnier will be available for, you know, he won't be on tour. So Charlie sat bolt upright in bed. He said, "We've got to make a record," and we started on the process. We rolled the gear into the living room and brought the musicians all together and started work on this record, which ended up, you know, fortunately Bob Dylan got well, so Tony went back out on the road, and Tony was co-producing the record with Charlie, it took us a long time to finish the record, and in the meantime, you know, there were births, there were deaths, there was illness, there was, you know, all kinds of stuff that was just life stuff that was happening for everybody in the band, and so the record took a long time, and during the process of that time, we realized that Charlie was very ill, and so it became his, you know, life's mission to complete this, and there are a lot of songs on that record that he had written, and so it was really, you know, doubly important for us, you know, to get it done, for him to get it done, and actually he was able to do it. It was just, when he died, there were a couple of little tiny things that Tony and I had to do that had, you know, that Charlie had really done the bulk of the, you know, the work had been done, and it was just, we ended up, Tony and I mastered the record and put it out. And but that record's called Beautiful Road, and we, you know, so I don't know what, but anyway, then it was after that, you know, I started my, kind of got to starting, you know, doing more performing and doing some writing myself, and you know, wrote that song and a number of others that you know, ended up being on that record that I did with Billy Derby and my friend Sam Bikini, the Fairtime record. So then that song, the Red Tail song, is on that Fairtime record.
Well, now, Kate, can I ask you a question? Now, did you write Country Comfort?
I didn't. I was in Los Angeles at that time, back in the early, you know, 69, 70, 71, and I went to the Troubadour, making my record, and I went to the Troubadour a lot, and I heard Elton John do his first United States, you know, concert at the Troubadour. And as much as I loved being in Los Angeles at that you know, at that time, because it was just, it was so cool. There was so much going on. But I was also quite homesick for my place where I lived on the East Coast. And when I heard Elton John sing Country Comfort, which he wrote with
Bernie
Taupin.
I did not know that was an Elton John song.
Yeah, it was on his first record. And
mm-hmm.
he did it at that show at the Troubadour, and I said to Peter, I said, I love that song. I wonder if there's any chance I can record it. And he said, well, I know Elton John's manager. They're both, you know, they're all English. I said, I know his manager. Why don't we arrange a meeting and you can ask him? And so met Elton John, got a chance to, you know, hang with him, and I asked him if I could sing the, record that song, and he said, by all means. And so I recorded that Country Comfort, and it ended up being the first single off that record. And I was off that Sister Keith record. So I was getting my band together for the tour. And my dad came out to L.A. He was having some kind of conference or something. And he and I got together, and we were driving around in the car on the freeway. And Dad said to me, hey, you know, what do you want to see happen with this career you're embarking on? And I sort of tongue-in-cheek, I said, well, you know, Dad, growing up with four brothers, and, you know, what I'd like is that if I'm in the car and I start singing and somebody leans over and turns on the radio, I want it to be me on the radio. My father leaned over,
yeah,
turned on the radio, and it was me on the radio. And it was me singing
perfect
that song, Country Comfort.
Wow.
Ladies and gentlemen, Kate Taylor,
great.
Here we go.
Soon the pines will be falling everywhere. Village children fight each other for a share. And the 609 goes roaring past the creek. You can leave, prepare the sermon for next week. I saw Grandma yesterday down. Oh,
Wow, fantastic.
Just wonderful.
God.
Oh, well,
I was a teenager.
Miss Kate.
Oh, my God. That's wild to hear that again. Yeah. So I was delighted to get to record that tune. Let's see, who was playing on that? A guy named Ralph Shuckett was on the keyboards, I think, and Bernie Ledden played the banjo. He was, you know, in the original duration of the Eagles.
Uh-huh.
Who else was in that? Linda Ronstadt and I think Abigail Hannes sang backup with me. And
perfect.
On that Sister Kate record, you know, Carole King played some. I did a couple of numbers. I recorded a couple of her songs that were on her Tapestry record. And,
fabulous.
She played keyboards on there. And who else was on that record? Danny Korchmar, who had been good friends with James for years on Martha's Vineyard in the summer, growing up in the summertime. And they worked together for a long time. And Danny played on the record. And Lee Sklar. I don't know. You know, just it was an amazing time to be in Los Angeles. I must say, everybody was just.
Well,
on
Kate, I have to tell you, I told the same thing to Bonnie Bramlett when we had her on the show. You and James and Carole King and Linda Ronstadt and Carly Simon. We were in London, and I was at college in England. We were the most proud Americans because you were like the most wonderful ambassadors, along with Muhammad Ali, to come in the 60s and the early 70s. You made us look and feel great. So know
yeah,
that.
There was some amazing talent.
Enjoy having you on the show so much. I want you to know you contributed so much by your very appearance, your youthful enthusiasm, your innocence, your belief that the planet could be a place for everyone to be equal and happy. We had just celebrated the Declaration of Human Rights in the 1960s.
Yeah,
you know,
I know. It was a great time, wasn't it? We were so proud. It was an awesome time for our generation because everything was, you know, the possibilities were endless. Things were wide open. And
yes.
It was just a beautiful, you know, it was a beautiful time. And I think that it's you know, we kind of, reality's kind of snuck in and everybody realized, oh, my God, you know, life there's challenges and, you know, families,
yep.
bills and, you know, lots of
yeah.
stuff to, but I feel like it prepared us for what we need to do now as sort of, you know, baby elders, you know, in the, you know, for what lays ahead of us, you know, we need to have, we that optimism and that innocence and enthusiasm and you know, belief that anything was possible. It's kind of what we need to dial back into, and I feel like, you know, we're in a unique position to be able to, you know, maybe, you know, forge you know, onward and upward and, you know,
yes.
bring it back and do it again.
I'm so excited. I wanted to ask you this. What would be like, without it being a chore, I say this as like a cue. What would be three lessons of your experience that you would share? Because what you just said appeared to me to be the most amazing lesson I've ever heard anyone talk about sharing. Yes, we need to dial it back and dial it up.
Yeah.
Susie Adams for Wood.
Well, you know, I just think we, you know, there is this reality of living, you know, on Earth, but there's challenges and responsibilities and things that we need to, you know, the day to day, you know, grind of living. But there's also this the glory of being able to experience life on this planet. It's a beautiful planet that really, you know, sustains us all. I mean, we are one with it. You know, we have this spiritual life, the spirit that we walk around in with, you know, that we are. And then we have this collection of molecules that ends up being, you know, our human form. And mm-hmm. It is so important that we respect and cherish that the other living things that we and non-living things that we share this life with. And I think that's the kind of where we were all at back in those days, you know, back to the land and kind of being conscious of each other in a spiritual sense, and that it's, we can do all the other stuff we have to do and still have that consciousness of each other and ourselves and the
planet. Exactly.
And that
yes.
One does not exclude the other. It's all part of the same thing. And we have a beautiful opportunity to encourage and inspire each other to do that. And
mm-hmm.
As brothers and sisters on the planet, you know, that we have two choices: love and fear. Mm. And you can't love if you're afraid, and you can't have fear if you love. And
that's
so,
right.
Which would we rather be in the middle of? Well, I would say we'd rather be in a state of love than in a state of fear. So,
mm-hmm.
you know, it's just a matter of choice, and that's what I try to focus on myself. Mm. But, you know, it's not always easy, of course.
Kate, would it be too much if I imposed upon you to introduce Beautiful Road for us?
Oh, yeah, I'd love to. That's a song that
while we were
making the Beautiful Road record, I heard this wonderful songwriter, her name is Erica Wheeler, and she was singing this song, and I loved the tune, and I met up with her after her performance of it, and I asked her if I might have permission to record it, and she said yes, and we recorded the song, and it ended up being the title track to that record.
Fabulous. I can't wait for you all to hear it. This is a wonderful song. Thank you so much.
Driving down the highway, my fingertips are to the wheel. Every landscape mirrors how I feel. I've got wide open valleys and high walls of stone. Sometimes I can see forever down this beautiful road. Everyone I've known, all the closeness and the distance of this beautiful road. And I remember every phone booth and what we talked about, like points on a map marking promises and doubt. I call when I got lonely. Your voice was like a hole somewhere down the distance of this beautiful road. Out in the Midwest, I stopped asking why. I just let the landscape echo what I was feeling inside. I heard music everywhere. I saw quarter notes fly. Blackbirds took off into the blue summer sky. California, I stood with open eyes, high above the sea, on a golden hillside. I could drive no further if I'd always known that I was the destination of this beautiful road. Fingertips are to the wheel. Every landscape mirrors how I feel. I've got wide open valleys and high walls of stone. I'll always be a traveler on this beautiful road. Beautiful road.
That's such a pretty song, that one. That Sprinkle Wheeler, I'll tell you.
Kate?
Yeah.
Kate?
Yeah, correct.
Is it my understanding your mom was a trained vocalist, if I'm right?
Yes, she studied voice at the Conservatory of Music in Boston when she was college age.
Yeah.
She lived up in Newburyport. That's where she was raised up. And she studied while she was in high school and did some performing, you know, some singing in churches and different places around Newburyport. And then she studied in Boston. And then she met my dad. And you know, that was it. She started to raise a family. And didn't do any more performing, but she was always very encouraging of us and our study of music and performing, and it I think she felt that was a good thing for us to do. She came to that show. Remember the talent show that I was talking about back when I was 15.
Uh-huh.
And she actually came to that show, and she liked to tell the story about how she came home from that show, and she said to the old man, "Man, you really missed something tonight. Those kids, amazing, you know."
That's great.
In those days, it really felt, you know, like anything was possible. But you know, if we'd really kind of thought about it, you know, the idea of making a career and a living out of singing and, you know, performing was it wasn't the easiest path to choose, probably. You know, I had met a fellow a number of years ago who had was Canadian, but he had been in New York City at NYU back in the early 70s. And he was familiar with James's music and had heard him on the radio and stuff. And he went up with some friends to one of their parents' homes in Connecticut. And there were the parents of these friends of his were sitting around the dining room table with some of their colleagues and friends. And they'd had dinner, having dinner or something. And his ears, this young fellow's ears, perked up when he heard the host, father, say to his friends, "Did you hear about poor Ike Taylor?" Well, they'd all apparently, you know, a number of them had gone to medical school with my dad, whose name was Ike Taylor, in Boston.
Huh.
And so he's going, "Did you hear about poor Ike Taylor?" And they all sort of, you know, looked at him, "What?" And of course, this young fellow knew that James's father's name was Octavius, or knew this was James's dad. And he listens in, and the fellow said, "His son's a folk singer." They're all so concerned about being a folk singer. But, of course, James is, you know, this miraculous, masterful, you know, musician and poet and, you know, performer and singer. And it just, you know, he's been just such a, you know, he's given so much beautiful stuff to the planet, you know, as has Livingston. And our brother Alex was an incredible singer. He was like sort of our fearless leader. When we were kids, he would sit us down and make us listen to all this different music, and he was an incredible singer.
Great.
He had this beautiful, magnificent, bluesy voice. He could sing anything, but he was very powerful and extraordinarily charismatic on stage. And then our youngest brother, Hugh, is also a wonderful singer. So, and I think growing up, there were five of us that were born in this family in 6 years. So we were very close in age and very close-knit family. And I think that for me, you know, the only way that I could get a word in edgewise was to be on stage with a spotlight on me. Because otherwise, you know, just a jumble of elbows, knees, and teeth.
Yeah.
Hey,
would you introduce Sun Did Shine?
Yeah, that song, Sun Did Shine on Carolina, you know, James and Livingston both have written songs about Chapel Hill or North Carolina growing up there, and I thought, well, you know what, maybe it's time for the sister's perspective. So I wrote this song, and again, my friend Billy Derby put the music to it.
Oh, fabulous. Thank you. Here we go. I love it.
We are the Chapel Hill Billies, mixture of grays and blues. One was built like a barrel with a face like the sun. Good God, his voice was a glorious one. But his blues were as deep as the sea that you see. He tried to lighten it up, but it wasn't to be. One is built like a reed that the wind blows through, with a heart like a harp, and he sees deep in you. With his ears on the music out in the spheres, well, your soul's in his hands, and his vision is clear. And the sun did shine on Carolina. I knew you there, and there's no place finer. The air is yellow green when the spring is high. The seventh largest sundial touches the sky in Carolina. One word's like a hummingbird, rings like a bell. He can fly a plane, he can dig a well. And his words like the preacher strike their mark. He'll make you laugh with his mighty spark. The youngest is cool like a shady day. The wind and a hammer and a song he'll play. If he gives you a sight of his light inside him, it'll keep you glowing even when he hides it. And the sun did shine on Carolina. I knew you there, and there's no place finer. Moonlight at night was good for creeping, while everyone else in the town was Carolina. mine. In the middle of this family from Caroline. And I'll play and I'll sing this song. I wanna go back where you come along. And the sun did shine on Caroline. I knew you there and there's no place finer. At Union Grove and by the fire. And around the table, a family choir. In Carolina, Carolina. We are the Chapel Hillbillies, mixture of grace and blue. Money, honey, gospel country, we've got songs for you.
Wonderful.
Wow, what a great snapshot.
I know.
Oh, my God.
Okay, this is just so wonderful.
Oh.
I have to tell you, we've been having such a great time. I just looked at the time. We have 7 minutes left.
Wow.
Would love it if you would introduce Fool in Love, and then we'll have to do our wrap, because I want
All
you to
right.
have a
well,
chance.
Listen, it's been a real pleasure and a delight to talk with you. Thank you so much, and let's do it again sometime.
Oh, yes.
Well, we're definitely going to do that.
Now, our mother...
Please tell us about Fool in Love.
Well, our mother would encourage us to listen to all different kinds of music, but there was one record she was hesitant to encourage us to listen to, which was an Ike and Tina Turner record called Dynamite. And
right.
Of course, we wanted to listen to that more than anything, and I've sung songs off that record ever since. And this is one of them. And my brother James produced this record, and James, Alex, and Hugh are singing backup on it.
What?
Perfect. And before we go, when we come back, please talk a little bit, if you'd like to, about James and this whole business now with Carole King and the album from the Troubadour that's done so well, if you'd like to.
All righty.
But here we go. Fool in Love, produced by Kate Rutherford.
Smiling when my
Oh, Kate.
And just a boo. I mean, what to say? Just a boo. All right,
oh,
so
you got to come back, Kate.
That one is so much fun to sing. And, yes, I'd love to come back anytime.
Please, because I want to talk
terrific.
To you about the stuff that you did with B.B. King, about playing with David Sanborn, our friend who David worked with, of course.
Oh, you're so fabulous.
There's so many things we haven't talked about. We haven't even had time in an hour.
I know. There's not enough time. Not enough time.
And I want to hear all these wonderful tunes. I mean, I love this Fool in Love. I was dancing around the living room. Yeah, baby.
Yeah, baby.
I love
right.
that.
Oh, I know. And I did a record down on Muscle Shoals, which is fun. I mean, those guys can play. Oh, my
oh,
God.
I'm
so, you know, the thing about the James and Carole King, their friendship is just extraordinary. And they met, and it was just like this, you know, the sun rose, and you know, the angels sang, and they had this great friendship, and then they did the shows that they toured together, and then, you know, 50 years later, they reconnected and did that amazing tour of America and did that album. And I went to see that show, you know, when they were touring just in the last, what was it, a couple of years ago or something. And it was Boston Garden. There wasn't a dry eye in the entire house. 20,000 people.
Oh, I bet.
People just, you know, it just means so much. Not only the songs are they beautiful and the presentation of them, but just the fact that these same people could get together all this time later and make this beautiful music and bring back, like what we were just talking about earlier, you know, bringing back the essence of that time and that era and recreating it, you know, and bringing it and letting it breathe and live again, you know. It's really, you know, it just means a lot to people, you know.
It does.
So,
I always think back to the musical history lessons, you know. And we had a teacher called Miss Graham, and she would talk about Mozart, and she would get, like, tearful imagining him touring
beautiful.
As a youngster, you know? And I always think when I hear those stories of, like you were saying, about them after 50 years getting back together and being able to recreate this incredible sound.
Yes, incredible, incredible. I got a chance
you know,
to hear the Young Rascals get back together after 40 years of not, you know, touring together, and that was amazing, too.
Yeah,
so it's just,
exactly.
There's nothing like it, you know, when you get these people that made that music, and it meant so much back then, and it means so much today, and it resonates still.
Yes.
You know, it's so rare and so beautiful, and we're so lucky. We're so lucky to live in this time, you know, when we can really, you know, maybe we can make a difference. I don't know.
Yes.
I hope so.
Yes.
I hope so. So that's the intent. That's the intent.
Mm-hmm.
And as long as we do that, you know, and then we have to, like, let's just say, okay, let's say we do get over our wounds and we do get over our, you know, our pain, and we end up, you know, in a state, then what? Then what do we do with it? You know, I think that's the place beyond the pain and the wounds. Let's go on to just imagine if we were in Eden, what would we want to see? You know, what would we want to do?
Rick's painting.
And when I look around, I see plenty of times it does look like we're in heaven.
Hmm.
So it's just a matter of perception.
I want to see a planet that's just harmonic. I can't imagine how wonderful. Wouldn't that be amazing to see it all in peace and harmony?
Well, you know,
just
what is amazing, we just have to see it, that's all.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not something that's in the future. It's something that's right now. It's just up to us
to
look at
it. Yes, we have to visualize it. You're right.
Yeah, we just have to look at it that way. And that's the way
exactly
it'll be.
Exactly right.
Well, you guys are angels on earth. And so I look forward to our next installment, ladies and gentlemen.
All right.
Oh, absolutely. Kate Taylor, you will be back, and we can't wait. Right, Rick?
Okay.
That's right. And in the meantime, maybe the three of us could start a band, And we can follow Kate's lead from her teenage band there, Peter Paul and Mounds. We could be Angie Bowie and the Spiders from Mars Bars.
Love it.
You're a funny man.
Sorry.
Sorry,
I apologize.
You're wearing that sombrero covered in sequins while you're talking.
You guys are on.
Okay. What a joy.
I can feel it. Well, God, you know, we'll see you. We'll see you down that beautiful road. All right.
All right.
Okay,
thank
you
so much, Kate.
Much
love. Thank
Thanks
for having
me
on.
Okay.
Bye for now.
It was our pleasure. I can't wait for you to come back and tell us some more wonderful stories and let us hear more wonderful music.
I'm there. Thank you so much.
You're so welcome,
you.
My friend. Bye, everyone.
Bye. Thank you, Angie.
Oh, thank you, Rick. Thank you, Kate.